Welcome to The Work Seminar, the podcast for people with liberal arts advanced degrees considering work outside their fields of study. Hey everyone, thanks for joining me for another episode. I'm your host, Jesse Butts. Today we have a bonus episode, and this one is all about the realities of self-employment. I'm chatting with Brian Boley, a payroll expert with years of experience being self-employed before hiring his first employees. Brian and I met when we were both working for a small business online payroll company when that was still a little bit of a novelty. Brian is now the founder and owner of InFocus Payroll, Good Bookin', and coming soon, Bookasure. Brian, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Jesse. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Brian, can we start a little bit with your background? Can you tell us what you were doing before you ventured out on your own?
Well, I spent many years doing customer service at all levels. So I started out as low as a bagger at the grocery store, moved my way up to customer service desk, then cashier. I really enjoyed working with the customers, making them happy. So during college and just after college, I took on some customer service representative jobs. And at the online payroll service, that's where I met you. I was working there and servicing 35,000 small businesses, answering their questions, helping them resolve issues. One of which you might remember was Twitter, back when they only had 5 employees.
Vaguely, I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so I had a problem with how the customers were being helped. So I went into the tax department because I thought that's where I could solve their issues. The troubles were just so much deeper than that, that I really felt like either I had to get out of the industry altogether or do something about it. Instead, right away, I found a position working for Aon, which was serving large Fortune 50 companies. Bank of America was one of them. And the corporate culture just wasn't for me. It was really toxic. That was where I was forced to decide whether or not I was just going to go and do something else, change careers altogether, or if I was just going to try to do something within the payroll industry. And that was when I decided to start InFocus Payroll.
And what time frame was this roughly that you started?
Well, I incorporated in February of 2012, so just over 10 years ago. And that was about a month after I had started with Aon. So I kind of had an idea pretty early on that it wasn't going to work out with them. And then I launched right after leaving Aon in July. I got my first client. That was pure luck and happenstance. I was at a networking event, a Chamber of Commerce networking event, and it was my very first one. I think I had 100 business cards. I thought that'd be enough. I had a business owner come to me. He says, I need payroll. And I just thought, well, this is going to be easy. I'll just get a client at each networking event and I'm going to be highly successful.
And did that pan out as you thought it would?
No. It was it was a disaster, actually, because then I went into each networking event trying to pitch my services to all the other people there to, you know, trying to make long-lasting relationships with other colleagues. And there I was trying to sell them on payroll.
For a little more frame of reference too. So you started your business InFocus Payroll a little over 10 years ago. How long were you doing that solo, just yourself?
So I ran into some difficulties pretty early on. Having my first child in 2013 did not help the situation. It kind of put a strain on our finances. And so I started taking on some consulting gigs. And so that allowed me to be solo for much longer than I probably should have been. Then as I started to feel like I could go back to the business and grow it, we had our second son in 2015. And so I started taking on some more consulting gigs all the way through the end of 2018. I did those. And then I kind of had an issue with a client, my largest client, more than 50% of my revenue. And I had to fire them, which was a really tough decision, obviously. And that was when I was like, okay, I have to take this seriously now. It was almost like a fork in the road again, just like before. I was like, either I got to make this work or get a regular 9-to-5 job. So that was when I hired my first employee, and he did not have any payroll experience. He came highly recommended from his aunt, who I had actually trained in payroll. Yeah, he's been great. He's still with me, and he's like my right-hand man.
Nice. Congratulations. So Brian, now that we have kind of a sense of your high-level story, I wonder if we can kind of tap into that expertise. So I'm curious, based on your experience going solo, if there's a listener out there who's been considering that, what should they do or consider at this point if they've been toying around with the idea for a little bit?
Well, it's different for everybody, obviously. I keep thinking back to earlier on in my career when I could have started sooner. And really, if you can do it, if you can get started before you have kids and a mortgage, maybe even before you're married, that makes life a whole lot easier because you're going to want to put everything that you have into this. It's not as glamorous as people think. It just takes a lot of work, and it can put a strain on relationships, especially when you're married and you have kids. It's no longer about you. Every decision you make is about us. So that's kind of my biggest piece of advice, would be to try and strategically plan the timing so that you have the least number of roadblocks in the way or any kind of things that could complicate the issue. And then second, after that, you either want to make sure you have a proper runway. So depending on what kind of business it is, it's a product, then a lot of times you need to start up with a lot of capital. If it's a service business like I started, it's a little less of an issue. You're only charging for your time and maybe some software. And then third, you might want to, before you quit your job, just kind of use friends, family, colleagues as guinea pigs to see if they're as excited about your idea as you are. Sometimes you can kind of get stuck in your own little bubble and think that you have this really great idea. It turns out that it's only going to help a small few, and you might be one of those small few.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that comment you made about self-employment not being as glamorous as it's made out to be?
Sure. I think that's touched on a lot in various different self-help books and everything. They try to really paint a picture of just like what it really means to start a business. And it's nice and it's rewarding to be called the founder or to be referred to as a business owner. It can feel like a prestigious title, but really you're not just the founder and the owner. When it's just you, you're the bookkeeper, you're the administrative assistant, you're the janitor, you're pretty much everything that you wish you could be and never wish you could be at the same time.
So for example, if you have a passion for photography, this spans a lot of creative endeavors, and you want to do more of that. People think, I can do more of that if I go on my own. And what most of their time, and it sounds like this is what you're mentioning too, is occupied with is, you know, booking the gigs and paying vendors and updating your website and answering inquiries, so that time for the actual practice of what your business is continually shrinks, especially as you grow.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly have more creative freedom when you're calling the shots and you get to decide what projects you're working on. It becomes really tough when you're starting to have to decide between the ones that the projects you want to work on and the projects that you need to work on that are going to actually help you pay the bills and keep the lights on. Definitely the bigger your business becomes, the more layers of complexities there are. And my father-in-law, who's a serial entrepreneur and one of my mentors, he told me right when I started the business, he's like, well, this is great. Now you only have to work half the time. And I thought this was odd for him to say because he worked like 70 to 80 hours a week. He's like, yeah, you get to pick which 12 hours a day, 7 days a week you want to work. And so it's kind of like, in order to get to the things that you really want to get to, you have to spend a lot of time working at the things that you need to work on. So I think of it as you could probably work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and maybe get by, but you would only be getting done the things that you need to get done. The things that you want to get done are the things that you save for after you get through all of the tough stuff, all the things that need to get done in order for the business to survive.
And earlier when you were talking about going into payroll, to a payroll business for yourself, you had mentioned that you'd hit this crossroads where you'd seen the problems and you felt like it was either try to solve them or make a career change. So I'm curious how we can frame this a little bit around, you know, the passion debate for listeners who might be wondering, like, do I pursue my passion? Do I pursue something I'm good at? And I don't want to put words in your mouth, so please, you know, correct me or disabuse me of any incorrect notions. But it sounds like maybe you did develop a passion for this, but it was really more like you saw this opportunity and felt that you could solve it versus being, you know, like payroll is the thing that I love more than anything. Like, what's your take on going self-employed in the, you know, passion versus practicality realm?
Well, let's just take a couple steps back real quick. Payroll was not always my passion. And I get asked that a lot, like, what made you want to do this? What made you want to start a payroll service? Even sometimes I take a step out and I look at myself and I'm like, how did you get here? But I saw an opportunity to make a difference and to provide a kind of service that didn't already exist. Customer service is not really highly valued within the payroll industry, mostly geared towards the technology end with low-paid, undervalued reps, glorified customer service reps, talking to the clients, telling them you're going to have to talk to your CPA about that, or, you know, we can't comment on that, or it's going to be 12 to 16 weeks until you get your amendment done. It doesn't matter what you're needing it for. And that was just frustrating for me to see. And at the time, I didn't really have any other thing that I thought stood out to me that needed to be solved. So payroll it was.
So, you know, for people who are really interested in self-employment, should they form or incorporate some type of company, or should they just work under their own name? Like, what's your take? What are you typically recommending to people?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, what they recommend. And really, if you're going to start out anywhere, if it's not a business where there's a lot of liability, where you could get sued, being a sole proprietor is absolutely the simplest, most straightforward option, especially when you don't have any revenue yet and you're just incurring expenses. And then once you get enough revenue to where you can think about paying yourself, that's when you need to talk to an expert like a business attorney or a CPA.
If you want to start working with a business name, is that permissible being a sole proprietor, or do you have to form a business if you want to, instead of, you know, Jesse Butts writing something like the best damn writer ever? Hopefully you don't use that name.
Yeah, that would be tough to fit on an IRS form. You can have a DBA as a sole proprietor.
A DBA is a?
Doing businesses. So you would file that with the Secretary of State. And it's pretty straightforward. Anyone can do it. You would need to publish in a newspaper your information and that your name is being used as a DBA and it's representing you as a company. So once that's published, you send that in, proof of the publishing with the application, then it can be official. So anyone can do that. When you're a DBA, it doesn't really shield you from anything from a liability standpoint. If that's what you're mainly looking to do, then it's better to form a formal entity.
If I'm a sole proprietor, that means that, you know, the IRS and whatever your state's revenue department, they don't see any difference between what I do for work and what I do with my personal finances. It's all one and the same. Is that accurate?
So there's opportunities to write off business-related expenses from your income. So that's one way to differentiate your expenses from personal. The main thing is that you have to pay self-employment tax because you are the individual and the business. You're both of those things. And so that is where the employer, in case you don't realize it yet, the employer actually matches the Social Security and Medicare on your regular W-2 income. A lot of people don't know that. And then when they start their business, they're really shocked when they get hit with the self-employment tax, which is the employer portion as well. So there is a difference, but it's all filed under the same tax return, if that's what you mean.
And how much is that, like percentage-wise, that self-employment tax?
Well, it comes across as 15.3%. 7.65% is the employee portion. 7.65% is the employer portion.
So when you're a W-2 employee for a company, you're only paying half of that. But then once you're self-employed, and we're talking about sole proprietor, you're paying all of that yourself.
Exactly. And that's why when you do become a consultant or you do work for yourself, your billable rate should be much higher than what your rate would have been as a W-2 employee to cover all the extra taxes, all the paperwork, the liability, and the hassle of setting up your own entity.
So why would somebody choose to create an LLC, which, you know, I see so many small business names have LLC at the end. Why would they choose to do that versus being a sole proprietor?
I mean, I'm not a business attorney, so this isn't legal advice, but when you set up an LLC, you're basically making that announcement or you're differentiating you from the business. That shields you from liability. Now, of course, you don't get that for free. You don't get to just do everything exactly the same way. There's a lot of extra hoops you have to jump through. You have to hold board meetings. If you're the only board member, then it's with yourself, basically. Yeah, you just have to basically record everything as if you are a business and not just an individual.
And you mentioned the liability, or a liability aspect, I should say. So what does that mean?
The liability of owning a business can span into many different realms. But for an example, I'll just use payroll. You could make a mistake that would damage one of your clients, either financially or emotionally, and then they could come at you for damages. So as long as you have your business operating under an LLC and you're not piercing the corporate veil by treating the LLC operating account as your personal piggy bank, you're not commingling personal expenses with business expenses, then really you should have business liability coverage. And between that and the entity itself should shield you from any personal liability, which means if you have a house and you have savings, that would be shielded from any kind of lawsuit.
And that business coverage liability, is that some type of insurance policy that you were mentioning there?
Yes. So there's general business insurance, and then there's also professional liability. So professional liability, you can think of it as like an endorsement for specific types of industries that you're in. So professional liability means you could make a mistake that would have a negative impact on your clients. Whereas there's other businesses where there's not really as much risk and it can all be covered under a general policy.
So, Brian, when you are self-employed, and let's, you know, just keep this simple. So like, you know, you've chosen the sole proprietor or maybe the LLC option. How do you actually pay yourself? Do you need payroll if it's just you and you're a sole proprietor or an LLC?
If you are an LLC, ideally, you want to be paying yourself guaranteed payments, which are basically the same as owner distributions, which is just taking money out of the account to use for personal reasons. The guaranteed payments go on the profit and loss statement, which can help you decide whether or not your company is truly profitable. Whereas if you don't take guaranteed payments, it might look like you're actually making more money than you really are, especially if you're trying to sell the business eventually.
So let's just make this very simple. If you're a sole proprietor, can you just, as needed, withdraw funds from a business account to your personal, or do you have to do anything formal around paying yourself?
No, when you're a sole proprietor, you can pretty much treat the business account as your own savings account. But it's not recommended, obviously. You want to keep it separate if you can, but there are no real regulations or requirements.
So let's say you're self-employed and you're doing well. Let's say you're a designer and you have more work than you can handle. Do you need to hire a W-2 employee if you've just decided that I can't do this, I need some help? Or is there some other way to get that help without hiring an employee that's, you know, still obviously above board?
Well, just like a lot of these other topics we've been discussing, I always try to introduce my clients to a professional that can speak on these more formally. But I will say that you never want to just jump to hiring a W-2 employee. That's a commitment that, if it doesn't work out, could lead to issues down the road. However, it's not always as simple as just hiring a contractor either. Contractors need to be treated as their own individual companies that can make their own decisions and operate when they want and how they want, up to a certain extent. If you're going to hire somebody and you're going to say, this is where we're at right now, this is where we need to be, go get them, then that can be a contractor. But if you're going to say, this is where we are, I want you to come in these hours, here's a computer that you can use, make sure you use this software, and I need it done by this date, then that's an employee.
So if you had a scenario where maybe, keeping with the designer thing, and again, I totally realize that this is not legal advice, this is just a hypothetical, but let's say you're a designer and you have this big contract and you find another designer and say, you know, this is where we are, I need these images in these formats 2 weeks from today, ping me if you have any questions. It sounds like, if I'm understanding you correctly, that's a pretty legitimate contractor situation versus an employee.
Yes. I mean, when it comes to something that detailed, you really don't have a choice but to lay it out for them, you know, this format by this date. But at the end of the day, you're still not telling them how to do it. You're still not telling them when to do it necessarily, because they could do it ahead of time. You're simply giving them some constraints to work within.
And I assume if you are in a position where you do need to hire an employee because, you know, you need them to work certain hours, you have to tell them every little thing that they're, I don't mean that like negatively, but if you have to give them a lot of instruction and training, what do you need when you hire an employee? Do you need like workers' compensation? Do you have to start payroll at that point if you haven't already?
Even if you don't hire an employee, if you hire a contractor, you may still need to get workers' compensation, or at least make sure that they have liability coverage. So definitely want to still make sure that when you hire a contractor, you have that. With a W-2, they're kind of like your responsibility. I joke and I call my employees my kids. It's like taking care of my kids. You have to make sure everything is above board and that you are transparent and reporting everything about that relationship. So you need to do a new hire reporting to the state. You need to collect I-9 verification and all their identification you need to verify to make sure that they are authorized to work in the United States. You need to have them fill out W-4 forms so that you know how much tax to withhold. And then for insurance purposes, you definitely need to get workers' comp. Even if they're working out of their home or your home, it doesn't matter. If they get injured while they're working, then that's a liability.
So Brian, as you, over the last 10 years, as your business has evolved and as you have started new businesses, what resources have you found most helpful in all of this?
Good question. Let's see. Well, my father-in-law, who's a serial entrepreneur, as I mentioned before, he's probably been my best resource. He's let me figure things out on my own quite a bit too. Yeah, it was pretty tough. I didn't really have too many people to lean on in the very beginning. I just had to really work on building relationships professionally to find out who I could trust and for what. Yeah, I think I learned the hard way a lot. I did join some networking groups. And there was, I don't know if you're familiar with mastermind groups, but there were some mastermind components. There were some coaches that I worked with. I've worked with 3 coaches. One was an absolute disaster. It was like every time I went to him with a problem, I left with 5 times that from the meeting. That was a very tough situation. Coaches can be a good thing, but they're expensive. So I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out really who's a good resource is. Actually, for my app that I'm just now trying to get built, I've actually joined a community called 1871, which is an incubator in downtown Chicago. They're a nonprofit. They have all kinds of resources and different workshops and things. So I would say that going to a nonprofit organization that is geared towards helping small businesses or someone in the industry that you're looking to get into, that's probably your best bet because they shouldn't have too much of an ulterior motive other than just to help.
So, Brian, if a listener is a little bit curious about what you're doing, where can they find more about like the payroll service that you offer? And I know that you do bookkeeping and you mentioned an app that you're developing. Can you just share a little bit about those?
Sure. I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but I am on LinkedIn. So the profile is Brian Boley, CPP. And then also the websites, I have infocuspayroll.com. It's the payroll website. And then goodbookin.com without the G at the end is the bookkeeping website. And my email address is brian@goodbookin or brian@infocuspayroll.com.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining me. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Work Seminar. If you like what you've heard, please take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Know someone who'd be a great Work Seminar guest or have a suggestion or two for the show? You can reach me at jesse@theworkseminar.com or at The Work Seminar on social. And thanks, as always, to John Camp for the music and Isabel Patino for the design. Until next time, never cease from exploration.